Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Pipes is writing down a lot of stuff. I'm just going to go from the gut. And joining us now, Coach Bielma.
Josh Whitman joining us now.
You get to say all the cool name drops.
Do it.
Brad Underwood, our guest.
College hoops.
How do you lose to Jackson State?
Call up every single person in the media that didn't put Kofi first team All-American. And I don't know, just play like clown noises.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh. Michael Porter Jr. has been good, but he thinks the earth is flat, so I can't pick him.
Oh, boy.
Throw it up to Kofi, and he's just going to tear the rim off.
How is he so good?
All right, Hans, I'm going to mute you for a while.
Okay.
Oh, there's a timeout on the court!
So what we want to do is build a same-game parlay that will win all of us in money.
Maybe Rondale Moore could be Cooper Kupp, but he's not. Is it Instagram?
Yeah.
Is that what IG means?
I think you have to win the Big Ten title to win Big Ten Player of the Year.
Woohoo!
Wow, what a bad take.
It is The Drive, ESPN Radio 93.5. Good evening, Lante. Derek Piper.
We're Trevor taking some Valise. Coaching from Trevor Valise during the break.
He was literally just yelling at me.
Get your mind right, Tay.
I need that on occasion, believe me. Okay, Pipes. You know, it's funny how I've been thinking about this over and over. Like, the idea that Reed Detmers is my son's age, and while I can't be any more proud of Lucas, and he just graduated and got his business diploma from Arizona State and this and that, but Reed Detmers is throwing no-hitters, man. You could tell how proud Chris is. You know, and obviously, Chris, like we mentioned, is a guy that almost made it to the big leagues, and now his son, of course, throwing the no-hitter. It was incredible. I know you had said off the air something about a no-hitter with the Cardinals.
Yes, yeah, so Reed Detmers, 22 years old, was on a list of the youngest to ever throw a no-hitter in Major League Baseball, him being a rookie this year. I still believe the youngest ever at 21 is Bud Smith from the Cardinals way back early 2000s, I believe. Yes. Was that in San Diego? I have that right.
That does sound right.
I have to effort that. For some reason, that's sticking out in my mind.
Bud Smith, who, man, at the time I thought, you know, because it's been so long since the Cardinals have had a legitimate lefty. Of course, Steven Matz started today's game, racked up some, you know, he pitched pretty well, racked up some Ks. But it's been so long since the Cardinals have had a really good lefty. And I can recall, you know, you've had the Marco Gonzalez in there. You had the, especially I'm talking about lefties you developed. Marco Gonzalez, you had, what was the one kid that got sick going into the playoff series against the Cubs? The final game. Oh, my goodness. Why can't I?
Jaime Garcia?
That's it. Yeah. Jaime Garcia. And then, of course, Bud Smith back in the day where you thought, okay, this kid might be really good, but then he just never really, I don't think, ever amounted to much. I think he ended up going to Philly, didn't he, and pitch? He went all over, I think.
Is that right?
But, yeah, so Bud Smith throwing the no-hitter being the youngest. That's amazing.
That was September of 2001. He beat the Padres 4-0.
Good memory.
Threw 134 pitches in the game.
Well, and that's the thing with Reed is just the fact that he was pretty, you know, not having to throw unbelievable amounts of pitches to get through that too. So, yeah, really cool stuff with Chris. I was excited to visit with him and get a chance to talk to him about that. You can tell that he and his family are ultra excited. So, very, very cool stuff. All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We've got plenty of NBA and NHL. Obviously, baseball going on right now, but I wanted to get your take on some of these NBA games especially and some of these NBA series. And I know that my Sixers have a game tonight, and it's a big one. They are at home trying to shave off elimination. Is that what you call it?
Stave off?
Stave off.
You could shave it, too.
I guess you could shave it. Right when I said shave, I'm like, I don't think that's right.
You're going to shave James Harden's beard while you're at
well,
it?
Well, I would. I totally would. I wish he would do that, to be honest with you. I've never liked it. Did he have that in college?
I don't think he did.
At Arizona, I don't think he did.
Maybe
either.
A little bit of one, not okay. the long, grow it out for a couple of years type of beard.
I remember when Illinois played against him. I wonder if you can effort that.
Is that Maui?
I think it was in Maui. Illinois played James Harden. Did we beat him? He played at Arizona State. And I'm thinking that he had a big game, but yet Illinois still won that game. I'm going to let you effort that as we're sitting
working
here
on
because
it.
I know that Illinois played James Harden because, you know, obviously now you're like, holy crap, they played James Harden. Back then, you knew he was a really good player, but you didn't know he was going to turn into a 10-year NBA veteran that is, you know, an all-pro, et cetera. I don't know if he is this year, obviously, but you get what I'm saying. So I just – was that the year with, like, Kyle Wilson and some of those guys on that team? Would that have been a Bill Self team?
I think Coach it team? Was a Bruce Weber team.
Oh, Bruce, okay.
Let's see. He was a freshman in 2007-08.
Okay.
And we'll look up the schedule here there.
That's awesome because I do remember playing against Harden. And, yeah, your memory today is on fire here with the at the Maui tournament because I'm almost positive that's where Illinois ran in to Arizona State.
Opening game of the Maui for Arizona State. Illinois had already played three games. Is that when they had the opener with Hawaii when
yes.
DJ Richardson
yep. hit the corner three?
Is that right?
I think that is right.
I might have that confused because they went to Maui mm-hmm. a handful of years. That was John Gross's first year. I think that's the one I'm remembering here. But anyways, 77-54, Illinois blew out Arizona
wow.
State in the Maui. Here's the starting lineup for the Illini. They had Brian Randle, Rodney Alexander,
oh.
Sean Pruitt, Chester Frazier, Trent Meacham.
Holy cow. Okay.
We see James Harden, 2 for 9 from the field, 6 points.
That's it?
And his Sun Devils got blown off the floor.
Okay, and that was his freshman year.
It was.
So I think that was the only time you played him. So, well, then I probably didn't think he was very good. I probably thought, well, who's this James Harden guy, and why is he supposed to be pretty good? Well, that's interesting that Illinois played against Harden. It'd be cool to go back and look at all the times you played against guys that are tearing it up in the NBA.
Other guys logging minutes just for fun.
Yeah.
Jeff Jordan logged 11 minutes in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Holdren, Champaign Centennial product,
right.
8 minutes. Calvin Brock, Dimitri McKamey off the bench.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. How cool is that? Is that the team? Well, that's the John Gross team. Or no, that was Bruce Weber.
Yep.
Did they make the tournament that year? Is that the Virginia Tech year?
No, they went 16-19 overall, 5-13 in the Big Ten.
Okay.
Missed the NCAA tournament.
Well, they started out strong. You got to give Illinois props, man. When they go to Maui, they go to play. They usually
they
play. John Gross's first year, they won the Maui.
Won the whole thing.
Isn't that crazy? Well, anyway, tonight the Sixers trying to stave off elimination against the Miami Heat. Have you been able to watch much of this series? I've been able to see some of it. Of course, Joel Embiid missing 2 games hurt because the Sixers won, I believe, game one. And no, is that right?
I believe the Sixers were down 2-0. They
That's
went back
right.
to Philly.
That's right.
And Embiid had been out the first 2 games. And
because
then
Embiid got hurt in the first round series. That's
right.
My fault.
Coming off concussion protocol. And then they won those 2 games. And Philly lost this past one in a blowout fashion in Miami. So back to Philly tonight.
Ugh. Can they force a game 7? And do you feel like there's any chance the Sixers, even if they force a game 7 in Miami, is there a chance they can beat the Heat?
I think there's a chance anytime you got Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Now, Miami is a really good team. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's been playing fantastic. And that's the funny thing about Miami. And they do this. It's not just unique to this year. But you see, like, Max Strus lighting it up
right.
from DePaul. Like, guys that aren't really – I mean, Duncan Robinson, we know, has become a starter for them. It's just interesting how the Heat don't have those – I mean, they have a superstar in Butler, and they've got Kyle Lowry who's been out. But they found these role guys who go undrafted and become these – very solid role pieces for them. So that's just kind of what Miami's kind of been known for here in recent years. And I mean, when you got a big three of Embiid, Harden, and Maxi,
you'd think that you'd be able to win the series.
Yeah, you'd think you could still take the game in Philly and then you toss it up game 7 in Miami and certainly have a good chance. But I would expect them at home to win. They play well in Philly, and I think that Embiid, especially getting slided after the MVP, I know that's been a big narrative.
Yes.
That he'll be coming ready to play for tonight.
Well, I would agree. And, of course, Jimmy Butler, who, you know, was with the Bulls, and they decided to not carry that on, and now he's gone to Miami, led him, the 1 year to the NBA Finals that they ended up ultimately losing. But other than that, I mean, Jimmy Butler has just been really playing some good basketball. Of course, this year he averaged about 28 a game, about 8 rebounds a game. I mean, it's unbelievable. Essentially, he led him in points and rebounds and assists and steals, by the way, if you want to go further down. So Jimmy Butler, just a guy that, you know, I mean, you don't you don't necessarily put him at the top of the pyramid. Definitely not at the top, not with Giannis and those guys and Jokic and et cetera. Or Doncic, I'm sorry. How do you, is it Doncic?
Well, you got Jokic and you got Luka Doncic as well.
Oh, yeah, you got both. Okay, so you don't put him maybe up there with them, but is he like second-tier guy? You'd have to be, right?
I think he has to be.
Okay.
Yeah, probably in that 10 to 15 range, maybe even a little bit. It depends on how you're going to ultimately slot it, because there's a lot of good stars in the NBA, and it hurts me as a Bulls fan who didn't like him too much when he clashed with Derrick Rose, and you thought that maybe he was just a locker room problem.
Exactly.
And then didn't stick there in Minnesota either, but found it down in Miami, and they've certainly won a lot of games with him down there.
That Tyler Hero, another guy, like you said, role, kind Hero. Of a role guy. Tyler Hero is averaging 14 a game in the playoffs for Miami Heat. So obviously he is someone that, you know, he's cranking out about 2 threes a game. And you mentioned Strus hitting about 3 threes a game. And oh by the way, Victor Oladipo. I mean, he just, you know, a guy that just gets things done for them, although, you know, he's been a little wounded in these playoffs as well. So I don't know. I'm with you. I think the Sixers get it done tonight in this game and then take it back to Miami. And then, I mean, at that point, shouldn't you win if you've got the big three of those guys? I mean, because I'm looking at this. How long has this experiment lasted in Philadelphia? I mean, it's been going on for 10 years, right, where they tried to tank and then just picked up all these first round. And really the one that hit, I think, right, the only number one that really hit was Joel Embiid, who obviously is a stud. But you messed up the Markelle Fultz. He ended up being nothing. You had guys before him that just were decent players but never amounted to much. And here you sit here and you're Philadelphia, and as me being, listen, I'm about as fair weather of a Sixer fan as I can be because I just don't watch a lot of the NBA. But it's still the frustration of every year, oh, I wonder what the Sixers are going to do. And then, you know, of course, Ben Simmons, another major fail. And yet here you are in round two. I mean, obviously, Miami won the East, so it's not like this is some huge upset, you know, with them beating Philly. But it's just so frustrating as a Sixers fan that you've basically been on this 10-year mission to win a title, and every year it always comes up short. Every year.
Yeah, it's got to be really frustrating. And you think when you're sitting there with Ben Simmons and, like, can we trade him for anything, anybody? Like, what are we going to be able to get for him? And you work it out to pull James Harden, and you've had the breakout year for Tyrese Maxey, and Embiid couldn't have had a better season, it seems like. So for that to all come together and not – if it does end here in the second round, it'll be very disappointing. It's interesting, and you'd probably know it better than me, but even going into the playoffs, there are people talking about, is Doc Rivers already on the hot seat?
I think he is. I do think he is. Now, I've heard I always hear, like, the pundits. I've heard half of them say he is and half of them that he isn't. Now, I don't know. I feel like Doc Rivers has done a pretty good job in Philly, if you ask me. I feel like he's done a pretty good job. I think the Ben Simmons thing hanging over that team for as long as it did was so frustrating. And, of course, even on the court when he was getting you a double-double, but he would only score maybe 10 points – and you're like, okay, hold on. Should you not just accidentally score 20? I mean, that's what guys do that are you. They score 20 points.
Right.
To the point where then he wouldn't even dunk at the very end.
He was under the basket.
It's unbelievable. So, I mean, just a mental, you know, that mental part of it, I if that is the case for him, I hate it for him, obviously. But certainly it was just a piece in that team that you just were like, let's just move on. So then you kind of start fresh. You get Harden, and of course now you got to incorporate James Harden in the middle of a season, essentially with Joel Embiid and Maxey and all of this. And I think you've done a pretty good job with that. Now, obviously, Harden has left you wanting more. He's had a couple of big games in the postseason. I know Trevor, when we were here and you were off this last couple of weeks, Trevor was like, "Hey, James, can you just have one of those games?" Like, Embiid's hurt, have one of your games, and he actually did, and it was in the clincher in the first round. But, you know, you look at, I feel like Doc Rivers made that transition of getting Harden into this lineup pretty smooth. Now, I have no idea what you do next if you're the Sixers. I do not, I can tell you this, want to sign James Harden to one of these max deals. Number one, he'd be making more than Joel Embiid, who's arguably the best player in the NBA this past year, finishing, what, like top three at least in the MVP voting. So you're going to then pay James Harden that kind of money, who's already played in the league for, what, 10 years, and really has not shown much since he's been in Philly. And everywhere he's been, minus Houston, well, it turned into a problem, didn't it?
It did.
It turned into a problem. But
it wasn't a problem in Oklahoma City, or at least one that we didn't know. I mean, that was early on with him, Durant, and Westbrook.
That's true. That's a good point. But, I mean, knowing that you're going to have an issue with him eventually.
Sure.
And knowing that you've got to pay him all this amount of money, if you do that, you're crazy, because I think within a year, Embiid's like, I'm out. I'm gone. I'm not sitting here watching this. And essentially, if you're paying Harden one of the top salaries in the league to become a 12-point assist guy, then you basically have Ben Simmons. Right? I mean, that's what you were getting out of Simmons.
Yeah. You at least know Harden can score.
Well, right. That is
true. You do know that.
That is a good point. So I'll give you that. All right. So Sixers, that game on at 6 o'clock tonight. And against the Heat, of course, Sixers needing to win to keep moving in that series.
But to tie a bow on that, like,
yeah,
to look back in recent years and see Kawhi with the Raptors win Boom. One and see Giannis with the Bucks win one and then sit there in the East and be like, okay, we might not be the – I mean, you kind of are a super team, so I'm not even going to take you out of that conversation where you've been in Brooklyn who hasn't won one but has been expected to, or obviously when you team up what – squads that LeBron has been on.
Ugh.
You think that why couldn't this be our year with Embiid having the season he's having? Why can't we be the team that comes out of the East, especially in a year when you're not going to see LeBron in the finals?
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. And then, of course, Embiid gets hurt. That's frustrating.
That's the one thing with him that just doesn't seem to go away.
And I know the knock in the head, okay, maybe you're past that, but you still have the torn ligament in the thumb and – It's just one thing after another for the Sixers, and it's just so frustrating. And what's even more frustrating is you mentioned Kawhi Leonard. If you recall, he made the most unbelievable shot, fading away from a baseline to beat Philadelphia. Otherwise, I feel like the Sixers could have – well, probably – I don't know, probably would have. Definitely could have won the NBA title that year. I felt like out of all of these years, that was your year. That was your chance. And Kawhi Leonard hits that unbelievable shot with a guy in his face. I don't recall who was in his face. But, I mean, just making that shot, and then ultimately they go on to win the NBA Finals, and it's just like, okay. I just really feel like that would have been the year the Sixers would have done it.
Yep.
But who knows? Well, they got to win tonight. Another team that has to win tonight is Dallas. That series 3-2 in favor of Phoenix, but it's back in Dallas. I admittedly don't know as much about these two teams. I know Devin Booker's back. That makes a big deal. I know Doncic is unbelievable for the Mavs. So what do you think in this one?
I just don't think Dallas has enough around Doncic. And you can include now Jalen Brunson, the type of year that he's had.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been spectacular. But that tandem, their bench player, just their other players within that starting lineup don't provide enough help. I mean, you look at their Game 5 when they lost by 30 in Phoenix, and Doncic had 28 and Brunson had 21, and they had other starters go, Powell had 0, Bullock had 0, and Finney-Smith had 8. So they just don't have enough, and when Booker's healthy, that Suns team just has a lot of depth.
Yeah.
A guy like Cam Johnson coming off the bench, we know that Ayton had a great playoffs last year, and he's really taking that next step. And then, of course, Chris Paul, who not a big fan of, but he sure has done a lot of winning with the Suns, and that's just a very well-oiled machine, and it looks like a collision course between the Suns and the Warriors,
Ooh.
Likely in that Western Conference Finals.
I love that. What's the other series in that? So the Warriors, is that still going? And then, of course, you've got the Bucks. Did they end it against the Celtics?
The Bucks are up 3-2.
Oh, okay.
Got a huge win last night in Boston. Boston had a 6-point lead with 2 minutes to go.
Giannis was bleeding and stuff.
Yeah. Let that thing slide. So that was a big loss for Boston. And then the Grizzlies, without Ja Morant, and it's been reported that Ja's probably not going to play again in the postseason.
Okay.
There's a good likelihood due to the bruised knee. They won 134-95
Wow.
In Memphis last night against the Warriors. So going back to Golden State, they're down 3-2 in the series. It's probably going to be over after that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But, the Grizzlies would have to win two more times against Steph Curry and company to push through. It's again, probably going to be Suns, Warriors, and that would be a fantastic matchup.
That would be fun. I'm not going to lie. That would be really fun to see that. And, of course, Giannis, man, that guy. It's the guy I've been really impressed in that series, Drew Holiday.
Yep.
He has really stepped up in that series and done some big things for the Bucs. And, of course, obviously other guys on that team that are making a difference. But it just seems like, you know, he's not a guy that you really think of as someone that you would, you know, would help carry you to an NBA title. But, I mean, that guy, he's had a big career. I mean, he's had a good, solid career. And, of course, Drew. I can't J-R-U-E. Why? Because then it always sounds like you're saying Drew, obviously, but he's really been good for the Bucks.
Oh, he's been outstanding. He was huge in their title run last year, and the Bucks were trying to figure out that point guard spot for a couple of years. Remember, they had Eric Bledsoe.
Oh, that's right.
And ultimately got Drew Holiday, who's been a very respected veteran for a long time and has elevated them, and another player that's given them a lot is Bobby Portis off the bench.
Yes.
He had 14 points, 15 rebounds last night, so former Bull who's doing some great things for the Bucks there. And yeah, Boston, respect to them, because middle of the season they were really scuffling and having problems on offense. Their defense is fantastic, and obviously Tatum and Brown, we know they're a star-studded duo.
We won't talk long about hockey, but there are some games tonight, obviously.
Sorry to interrupt. Funny thing. I've been more in on the hockey playoffs, you'd be proud, than the NBA playoffs, personally.
Really?
Well, I've been sitting back at home with Haley's a Blues fan, so that's certainly played into it.
That helps.
While we're sitting with the little guy on the couch, we've watched a lot of hockey. But I've gotten into the Penguins-Rangers series.
Yes.
It's going to Game 6 after a big win for the Rangers last night. There have been some good ones.
There really have been. And four games tonight that could be series deciders. Carolina, of course, at Boston. The Hurricane get the big win, the last win. That would have been, Wednesday, I believe. So now, not Wednesday, Tuesday. So now you're sitting there looking at Boston being at home, having to extend that series. And then, of course, Toronto and Tampa Bay. Tampa looked really good at moments, and then it's all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, Toronto's just doing what they do. Now they're up 3-2 in that. Man, does Canada need a cup? Canada has not won a Stanley Cup. I can't tell you the last time. Can you pull up? Do you mind doing it?
Look it up.
Yeah, it's just amazing that, you know, that is when we think of, obviously, the birthplace of hockey. And when you think of, like, what do you think of when you think of Canada when it comes to sports? You think of hockey. And yet that country has not hoisted a cup in so long.
Since 1993.
Is that right?
The Canadians.
Oh, my goodness.
Won in 93. It's been that long.
So you can imagine if Toronto, obviously, if they would make it to this next round, and of course Edmonton still involved. In fact, Edmonton fighting for their lives, having to win at LA tonight.
Don't sleep on Trevor's Calgary
team. No, and Calgary, that's exactly right. So this is the first time in a while I feel like the old Canadians, and I don't mean Montreal, I don't mean the Habs, I mean the entire country, they have a chance at winning a cup. And I think that's something to watch, because I think that entire country will be behind whatever team makes it to the cup if it is a Canadian team. Of course, the big one tonight is the Blues. A chance to put this away at home against the Minnesota Wild. Can I say this? We had Chris Raby on when you weren't here, and Raby said this will go 6 or 7. It's just obvious. And I know, look, all of these have for the most part, except for Colorado and the thrashing in Nashville. But, excuse me, you look at this, I don't want to go back to St. Paul, Minnesota. I want to get this done tonight in St. Louis, and I'm anxious to know. I don't know if maybe they've announced it, but I don't know why I'm choking. Who do you start? I mean, do you start Bennington? Do you go back to Husso? I mean, I don't know. I'm almost to the point where it's like I'd throw Bennington out there between the pipes, knowing that you've got a chance to put Minnesota away, and, of course, then guess who awaits? Those Colorado Avalanche. Mm. That's not exactly great, congratulations, now you get to go play the Cup favorites. But, you know, this is going to be a fun – and I think this would be a great series. And I'll be honest, if I'm Colorado, I'd rather play Minnesota. I would not want to play the experience and the vets of a Blues team. But we'll see. We'll see what happens tonight.
Was Bennington in net for Game 5?
I can't remember. See, I didn't watch it because I was at a graduation. I was thinking he was.
I'd have to look.
I was thinking he was.
He was.
Okay,
yep.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm assuming he's back in net tonight would be my guess.
How big is this series for you as a Blues fan? Because I was trying to figure out what they've done post Stanley Cup.
Oh, they haven't won a series.
They've lost in the first round the last two. Not to like pour that salt in there, whatever it is, but like we
appreciate you bringing up the Kawhi Leonard and
you're, My bad.
I get all your little jabs.
Yeah, no, not intentional at all. But is this still viewed? Because I remember with the Cubs, we talked about it at length, like the window to try to stack another deep run. And is there that kind of pressure? And I don't know it as well in terms of how it's viewed
right
within the Blues context. But is there like pressure for this to be the year to do it? Or
no, I don't believe so. And you look at it this way: Husso and Bennington still pretty young in that. So that's big. Ryan O'Reilly's still fairly young, your captain, and obviously I'm not going into the contract situations, but I think you still have, I mean, you've got, you know, Jordan Kyrou, who's a young kid, Robert Thomas, who's a young kid. Those two are just now really to show. You've got some young defensemen that are coming up through the wings. I mean, you've got some older guys like David Perron and such, and Vladdy's not a young buck anymore, but what a year he's had. I just, you know, and then you look at that defense with Kevin Faulk, and you've done some things there, and of course you've got some injuries on that defensive side. Parayko has not played that well, but he, by NHL standards, is still fairly young. So I don't feel like this is in the midst of, like, okay, we've got this year and next, and then you blow it all up. Right. I feel like Doug Armstrong has done a good job, number one, putting that Cup team together, and really it all came together, number one, because of Bennington. Number two, because of the trade with Buffalo for Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, that sealed the deal, right? You finally had a centerman that year that was one of the best. And quite honestly, that year with the Blues in 19, they had four solid centers. Up and down that, all four lines had a good center. And that it had been since I was maybe born. The last time, I mean, Dougie Gilmore was maybe, you know, and that crew was maybe the last time they had that. So in my mind, you're not as in great a shape maybe as you were that year. You still had Petrangelo and all that. Of course, hockey comes around with the salary cap, you know, sports, not hockey. But I just think that there's still the pieces on this team that can still do some damage. I haven't looked ahead to see like what the cap numbers next year will be, but the Blues were really up against it this year with the cap. So I think Armstrong's done a good job of kind of, you know, mixing and matching with that and making things happen. So I just think this is a Blues team that's built to last. Now, is it built to last to the point of always being considered a heavy or at least a Cup contender? I think they are this year, but the problem is Colorado's so good. Now, I think Colorado's got holes. I think they, you know, I don't know that they have, you know, a goalie that obviously is not proven in the playoffs. And you still have some young kids on that team, but boy, are they fast. They remind me of the Hawks when they went on their tear and ended up winning three Stanley Cups. They kind of remind me of that kind of a team. We'll see if that happens. But I still think the Blues here in the next couple of years are going to be really good. And as long as Kyrou continues to develop, as long as you can keep O'Reilly, as long as Thomas continues to develop like he is, you've got some younger kids coming up that I think will make some things happen. But really, to me, it all comes down to the goaltender as well. I mean, you signed Bennington, and he deserved every penny. I don't care. You could pay him every amount of money you want, and he can never win a game again, but he won you a cup in St. Louis, which had never been done. So in my mind, he's got a lifetime contract. But certainly, he's young enough, and he's being paid enough to be a number one goaltender, and he's got to show that next year.
Yep.
I feel like he's got to show that. Thank God for Ville Husso this year. He was really good, and now all of a sudden, what do you do there? So do you just carry two really good goalies, but Husso's going to want paid? Or are you going to have to get rid of Husso? Or do you say to yourself, okay, let's try to get somebody to take Bennington's heavy contract, and now you got Husso for a little bit less, and hopefully he's as good as Bennington. There's a lot of question marks, and I'm sorry, I'm just hogging this answer, but I feel like Doug Armstrong has earned the trust of every Blues fan. Most every move he makes has worked, and I just think he's done a wonderful job. Number one, he got you a cup, and again, the trade of Ryan O'Reilly was brilliant. And so after that, I feel like Armstrong's got a good head on his shoulders in terms of not trading away guys that are still, you know, have a lot of really good years left, but yet also understanding where the cap is and where you are. And I give the Blues credit to their ownership, the Stillmans and such, that they play to the cap. You know, they every year are to the cap. And that was a worry for me sometimes with the Blues, is are they going to Oh, by the way, the Blues still have $6 million of cap space. Well, what that means is they're being cheap by $6 million, essentially. So I give that credit to the Blues. Can we get Pietrangelo back?
Where's he at now?
Well, he's in Vegas.
And the old Golden Knights.
Yeah, and I mean, he was just the heart and soul of that team and that defense. I think next year, if you're asking me about next season, if it doesn't end with a cup this year, I think defense would be my number one. Because Parayko, while he should be one of the best defensemen with his length and his ability and his experience, I'm not saying he's not a good defenseman, but all too often you're seeing a minus out of him on a plus-minus factor on a nightly. And you're just sitting there like, why is that the case? I understand he's out there against the top lines. And there is something to that. But I just feel like Parayko's never taken the jump that like a Pietrangelo did to be that number one defenseman. And I feel like, I just wonder if Parayko was just the perfect Scotty to Michael, if that makes sense. He was the perfect defenseman when he knew he had Pietrangelo on the ice. I'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Falk's good. Krug's good. Krug's been hurt. You've got some guys, but I just would feel better next year if they could make something happen on the defensive end with that.
Makes sense.
Long story short, Blues win tonight.
8:30 p.m. Enterprise Center. It's gonna be hype.
Where's Trevor for me to say, that's so late? Why I can't stay up on a Thursday night till 11:30? I will tonight. I'm still on Arizona time, baby. Like right now, you know, it's like, what, like 3 o'clock?
It's like brunch time.
Exactly. I'm good to go, man. It is perfect. All right, let's take a break. You want to talk some baseball when we come back?
Let's do.
Let's talk a little baseball. Good stuff with Chris Detmers earlier in the show. Again, if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, make sure you tune in. You can podcast that on stevieJay.com, stevieJay.com. We'll talk some Cardinals, maybe a little Paul DeJong. We haven't really discussed that quite a bit. And, of course, Juan Yepes, homers last night. We'll discuss all of that when we return. It is The Drive. It is The Drive, ESPN Radio 93.5. Lante, Derek Piper, Trevor Valise as well. You know, we heard from Detmers, obviously. We talked a little NBA and some NHL. I talked way too long there about St. Louis Blues. Sorry, everybody.
That was good.
Hey, it's still hot out, by the way, here in Central Illinois, but whatever. Again, much better than what we were experiencing for sure. The Cardinals. You were out, of course, as Cade was being born, and Paul DeJong was sent down, essentially, at the tail end of all of that. I was talking today with a guy, and I said, you know, the one thing I feel like the Cardinals – I mean, I feel like everybody likes DeJong, right? I mean, he's a likable dude. And I think we all were pulling for him because we could understand what he was. In a nutshell, he was a very affordable, serviceable shortstop where he was good defensively, and he added some pop. He wasn't a guy like Tim Anderson you thought was going to go out and hit 305. And he wasn't somebody I ever thought that would drive in tons of runs to where you just put him in the four spot and let him go. But I always pictured DeJong as like that number six hitter that could get you 25 home runs. And you know, let's say hit 250 and play good defense. And really, that's all Paul DeJong had to do to stay in this lineup. And the question to you, Derek, is this. I feel like the Cardinals gave him every opportunity, not only last year, but this year as well, in terms of giving him basically more than a month to try to prove himself, and they finally just ultimately had to make the decision, this isn't working.
It's not working, and it doesn't help that you, in terms of for DeJong's kind of just his, the patience with the fan base and everything, when you have Tommy Edman, that someone that you feel very good about, and Nolan Gorman doing what he's doing in AAA, that everyone's waiting for Edman to move to short.
Yep.
Gorman to play second, and then to just roll with that the rest of the season. Now, even going in, I wondered, based on how Edmundo Sosa had played, I know he didn't have a good postseason showing because he bobbled like three balls, it seemed like, in the first inning. But he had played
decently
well and was an option that you wanted over DeJong. Mm-hmm. Maybe there'd be a competition there that Sosa might earn the job, but I know he's been hurt, but
He didn't do much in the spring either.
No, and he started the season ice cold with the bat. So when you have two shortstop options, both hitting under 200, and DeJong was at 130, you got to do something different. And DeJong, it gave me, and because it was so close to the Matt Carpenter situation, yes. A guy that, like you were saying, we know who this guy can be, very likable. It weren't the same guys, though.
Right.
Matt Carpenter was broken at the plate, and he just had to move on, and it seemed like the same thing with Paul DeJong, where last year he hit 197, and even the year before that, it was 250, which you would take, but the power had kind of evaporated a little bit. So I was with you, and it's crazy. You look back, as a rookie, he hit 25 home runs and hit 285, and that was really his probably best showing.
I agree.
His all-star year in 2019, it was really front-loaded with a great start, gets you an all-star appearance. He hit 30 home runs, but only 233 at the average. He was a good defender, not great. Wasn't making a lot of spectacular plays, but he'd make the solid plays, the ones you'd
yes.
expect out of a major league shortstop. But I'm cool with this. I'm fine with him not starting it short for
yeah.
the Cardinals in the foreseeable future. I'm hoping it works. I want to see Gorman as soon as possible. I know we haven't gotten a chance to talk a ton about that, but in the meantime, is Brendan Donovan. I know he's gotten – he had a home run a couple nights ago,
yeah.
and he's hit a little bit.
He's had some hits. Well, that's the thing, though. So here's the thing that confuses me. It's almost as though you're doing everything to not bring up Nolan Gorman.
Right.
And that's fine if that is the case. I almost just wish the Cardinals, and maybe they have in not so obvious ways, I almost wish they would just come out and say, okay, just a message to Cardinals fans, you're not seeing Nolan Gorman until the second half of the season or until the rosters are expanded. We are letting him have an entire year at AAA to play defense and to continue to hit and to get as many at-bats as possible. I just kind of feel that because, you know, this, like you said, this idea of moving Edman to short, which is his natural position, although when I look at Tommy Edman, I feel like second base would be his natural position. But, you know, he came up doing that. And so I look at that and I think to myself, okay. And then I hear, like, the announcers basically saying, well, listen, it's going to be a while before Tommy Edman just moves to shortstop. So, okay. So then what are you doing? You're playing Sosa. Well, now he's not available, so now you got Donovan there. So now you bring up this Brendan Donovan kid, and now he's your shortstop. And so Edman stays at second, and you can't get Edman out of your order because he gives you something that you don't really have, and in fact, including like that leadoff guy, I feel like. Switch hitter, he's got speed, really good, Gold Glover defensively. You're not taking him out of the lineup. So the more I look at it is you're either bringing Nolan Gorman up to play a corner outfield spot, and certainly Tyler O'Neill, I know he had a hit today in the ninth, but Tyler O'Neill's not tearing anything up, but you're not taking him out of this lineup. And then Dylan Carlson, who obviously homered today and is a guy that has played fairly well, I don't think you're taking him out of the lineup. So are you bringing Gorman up just to DH? Like, I'm asking us, you and I, as Cardinals fans, we want to see Gorman, but should we be seeing him? Or are the Cardinals making the right decision here? Or is it as simple as this? Hey, guess what? Next Monday, starting Monday, Edman's our shortstop and Gorman's our second baseman. It seems like that ought to be the way you do it.
For the fan, it's easy to say, and maybe it should be that easy.
Surely Edman is good enough to make the switch from second to short and be serviceable for a while and then turn back into a Gold Glove shortstop.
Well, see, that's the funny part about it. When Edman was first coming up with the Cardinals, he was playing literally everywhere.
Exactly.
He was playing at second. He was playing at short. I think he might even played a little bit at third, played in the outfield. They were putting him wherever they needed him just to have his bat in the order. He was that platoon guy.
Yep.
And you would think that at that point, when you're trying to make it in the majors, that would be the hardest time to then play all over the field, where now, I get it, he's maybe in his routines at second base. He's a Gold Glover there, like you said.
Absolutely.
Why not, where he's comfortable with his status on the team and in Major League Baseball, say, okay, we'll give you a week to get some reps at shortstop, and then we'll throw you in there. And I was excited when I saw DeJong got sent down, because I thought it meant Gorman was coming up. And then to see Kramer Robertson, who's he was hitting like in the 200 range in AAA.
Right. Good
coming
stolen
up.
Base, good defense.
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but we need some hit. I mean, when Tyler O'Neill's now under 200 and the DH spot is spotty, and the Cardinals, it's way too early to freak out, especially when you're still in a decent position, but here's slipping a little bit here in the last week or so. Would love that. You could just imagine, I would think, the infusion of if Gorman were to come up and start hitting bombs with the big league club, how much that would give to this team. So I'm ready to see it. I don't see any reason why by June 1st it couldn't happen.
It's incredible. And, of course, you know, the elephant in the room, which we didn't talk about, is the Cardinals losing today. And you just mentioned Tyler O'Neill hitting under 200. And then today he gets that little shallow hit to right, you know, in the ninth inning. That would have been the tying run. And then he gets doubled off first. I mean, what? So it's funny. Like, I'm not losing my patience in Tyler O'Neill. Are you losing faith, though, in him? And here's the other interesting thing. You had Bader and O'Neill both going to arbitration. Bader signs a new contract. Not just arbitration. Not did he just not win the arbitration hearing. The Cardinals signed him to a new deal. And essentially the Cardinals saying, you're our center fielder for the next couple of years at least. And then you've got Tyler O'Neill, who last year, he's already won two gold gloves. He had an MVP-type year. I mean, obviously last season. And not only do you not sign him to a new contract, but he loses his arbitration hearing. So now it's almost as though, as the Cardinals, you know, you're sitting there going, oh, crap, he might be ticked off all of a sudden. But I always wonder to myself, you can't, Pipes, look at that and say to yourself, well, the Cardinals obviously value Harrison Bader more than Tyler O'Neill. We know that's not the case. I'm not saying that they don't value them equal, but it's not the case that they value Harrison Bader more, I don't think. But you look at this and you think to yourself, okay, is that more of Tyler O'Neill saying, just take me to arbitration. I don't want a contract yet. I want to prove myself for a bigger contract. Well, if that's the case, then he's falling on his face right now. Or is this the Cardinals looking at this going, we don't know if you're Randall Grichuk.
Yeah.
Or, you know, pick an outfielder during that stretch, you know, where it's like, or Steven Piscotty. I mean, look, the Grichuk and Piscotty, both pretty good Major League Baseball players, but they certainly didn't turn out to be, I think, what a lot of people hoped. So it's just an interesting thing that's going on right now with O'Neill. And I wondered, up until this arbitration hearing and such, and during the contract talks, is that the thing that's making him struggle? And I think that's happened before to players. Now, he kept saying the right things. He's like, look, I don't think about that stuff. I just go play baseball. But now, all of a sudden, he loses the arbitration hearing. He's under 200. I mean, I'm not blaming today. He gets doubled off, but that's still pathetic. I mean, when you lose 2 or 3 or whatever to the Orioles, that's pathetic anyway. But I'm going to shut up. What do you think of that whole Bader signing a new contract and O'Neill not only signing a new not signing one, but losing an arbitration?
It's frustrating right now with O'Neill where last year was the breakout year. I mean, you're not going to argue against when he hits 34 home runs, and it was even 138 games. He didn't play the full 162, but he hits 286. And like you said, right. I mean, he was in that. He was a gold glover back-to-back years in that top 10 of the MVP voting. So you're hoping he would then just emerge as, I mean, it's not really hyperbole. He could be a star in your outfield going forward. And I was there opening day where he hits a home run and has 5 RBIs right off the bat. And then ever since then, after that first week, he's been dreadful and not even having good at bats. So guys have had slow starts before. I mean, we saw how many years did Matt Holliday not hit until it was 100 degrees in June.
That's a good point.
We did see that. I'm not saying making too many excuses for him, but I mean, you bring up a good point. If that off-season contract situation isn't lingering over or something that just kind of messed with his vibe or whatever it is. But I don't know. I've still been, in terms of the situation, we gave O'Neill opportunities and it paid off last year. And you're hoping that would continue to give Bader opportunities. Still want to see him, and we're probably never going to see it, him be like, I'm not saying a high average guy, but a higher average guy in terms of more on base. We know that the center field defense is spectacular.
Incredible.
So I could get it if he feels a little bit where he looks over to his left and sees a guy that got a new contract and he didn't even win arbitration, and that's kind of messing with him. But ultimately, I'll take him at his word and that he's just maybe just scuffling right now and something he's going to have to fight through.
And you know, and then you see like Juan Yepes come up and do what he's doing. He's hitting like 400. Today he was 0-for-3 today. He missed a home run by like 4 feet down the left field line that would have given the Cardinals a 2-1 lead. So you know what he's going to be able to do. And you know, you look at that and you see that occur, and I'm kind of like fishing this back to where we were talking about Gorman. It's like, okay, well, you finally gave Yepes a chance, albeit a small sample size so far, but he doesn't look lost by any means. And he looks like, you know, since he's been up here, the Cardinal offense, you know, today, what, they only get two runs, but the Cardinal offense has kind of clicked with him in the lineup, and yet here's Gorman sitting down there, and they're not even giving him the chance to do it. So I'll see. And, you know, back to Bader as well. Bader has the kind of speed and talent that you'd love to see him at the top of the order, but you just can't trust him, can you? You can't trust him. I think he's always going to be a bottom-of-the-order guy. And I guess now with the DH, that's good. You know, you can put Bader down there, and you've got a lot of speed at the bottom. And, you know, after that initial run through the lineup, then you're kind of on par. But certainly, if that guy could get to the point where he's your number one, if you're a leadoff hitter, with his speed, it's ridiculous. And his power.
Yep.
I mean, he's got power to hit home runs as well. Not that I care that Bader necessarily hits a ton of home runs, but and you mentioned it, his defense is incredible. And you put him and Tyler O'Neill on that outfield, and it's really good defense. And Dylan Carlson isn't bad as well. So we'll see, but I don't know. Again, you know, all those years it always seemed like, well, we have all these outfielders, but do we really? And now I feel like you do, and now all of a sudden you got all these Yepezes and Gormans and stuff. So where do you play him? How do we do this? And I don't know. It's just, I sound like a spoiled fan here, obviously, because they're winning. But you get to the point where it's like, okay, the Cardinals are winning, but I feel like they ought to be better.
Yes.
Than what they are.
For sure.
And it's like, if we have all these pieces and we don't have five stud starters, can we go out and get a stud starter with a piece? I don't know. But, of course, you didn't spend the money to get Scherzer, and that is something that still is, oh, man. But he wanted a lot of money.
He did.
He made a lot of money.
Yeah. For Michaelis to be as good as he's been.
He's been good.
I mean, that's certainly been great. You'd hope that the team in general would be a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because the Brewers are playing very well.
They are. And that's hurting you right now down the stretch. So we'll see. Cardinals again, they lose today 3-2 to the Orioles. I mean, you lose 2-3 to Baltimore. Now you got the Giants coming in. The good news is get this Giants series over with. Get the Giants out of the way.
We never like seeing them.
No. Get them out of the way. Of course, you still got to play San Diego, who's playing well. You still got to play the Dodgers down the road. And then, I don't know, then you've got, like, you go to the Mets. You're going to get the Mets out of the way. All of a sudden, your schedule got pretty tough, and the Cardinals haven't been handling it very well. I'll put it that way. Now, they did split with the Giants. Bernie Miklas had a great article the other day about how the Cardinals just can't quite finish. Like, they're winning 2-3 in a series. Or, you know, you win your first two against the San Francisco Giants in four. Not that anybody expected you to go take 3 or 4 in San Francisco, but you won the first two. Go ahead and win another one.
Yep.
But they didn't. And they kind of tie that series. And it's just, even the opening week against Pittsburgh, even against the Reds.
The Reds, yeah.
They're just taking like 2 or 3. I don't think they've swept the series yet. And so you look at that, and it's like, it'd be nice to get a sweep of a series. And I think maybe you circle Baltimore to be able to do that. And not only did you not do it, you actually lost 2-3 to the Orioles, which doesn't make any sense. So,
Oreos.
Oh, well. Well, listen, we're running tight here. We got to get out of here. Tomorrow is Friday. No Hans.
So is it really Friday?
It's not really Friday then. We'll try to have a drink.
We'll still have a Friday.
Yeah, we'll still have a Friday. But, yeah, no Hans D, of course, graduating soon from the University of Illinois.
Awesome.
So excited for him. We'll, I think, see Hans the next week. Not tomorrow, but obviously next week. So no Hans D, but we will be here. We can promise you that. So until then, Pipes, that'll work for me. You have a good Thursday. Let's go Blues.
Go Blues.
So is Haley able to stay up and watch this thing?
Oh, yeah.
Do you take Cade and leave the room if she starts to get a little vicious with the language? I don't even know. Has Haley ever cursed in her life?
Probably? Oh, yeah. She's okay. Cursed, but if anyone's getting a little too out of hand, it'd probably be me during a Cardinals game,
right?
or a game that we wagered on. But
is she good at watching and just kind of being calm?
I'll report back tomorrow.
Okay.
Because this is a big game.
This is
we'll
big
see.
Game.
It's pretty happy game 5, but I'll let you know.
We'll have to do this. How about this? Because she's earned it. How about you stay home with Cade one night? Haley and I are going to go to a bar, and we're going to watch the Blues against the Avalanche
right.
In round 2. I think that would be awesome. And I'll just be like, look, I'm driving. You have as much fun as you want. Of course, There's all
she'd
that.
Be a lightweight because she still hasn't dabbled
like one beer
since having the kid.
I'd get my bill and I'd be like, whoa, are you forgetting something here? Because Pipes usually drinks a lot. Haley really helped. She kept me off the hook there. All right, buddy, let's get out of here. Go Blues. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, man.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow on Friday. Till then, we're gone. It is The Drive.